Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Jonathan Von Tobel, JVT of Money Moves will join us. We will go over the NBA playoffs, react to this weekend, look ahead to round two. Excited to talk to JVT, see if he's got thoughts. I think he bet some NHL too, maybe get his thoughts on some NHL. But as we're recording this, the Cavs putting the finishing touches on the Raptors, lead by 20 here in the fourth quarter. So pretty anticlimactic Sunday here. You go into a Sunday, game sevens, at least in terms of the NBA. I know the hockey game was pretty good with Montreal beating Tampa, but didn't watch too much of it. But game sevens in hockey, always pretty good. But the basketball games were pretty anticlimactic, which I was somewhat expecting. The Raptors hung tight, played a good first quarter, a decent first half. I saw the stat, too. Through the first half, each team in the series had scored, I think, exactly 717 points, something like that. They were dead even in point differential through the first half of Game 7 throughout the series. But Cavs pull away in the second half. They will move on. They will play the Pistons as Orlando, man. Just another bet in a long line here, unfortunately, on this podcast especially. Miami in college football, UConn in college basketball. These bets at long odds that look pretty good and get close enough to tease you. And this one wasn't as close as like Miami was a minute, not only a game away, but a touchdown away, a play away from scoring. UConn was a game away and had their chances in that game, you know, had leads at that point. This wasn't that close with Orlando, but at 55-1, they were all but in the second round, and then who knows, and for a while, I'm thinking, man, they could be playing the Raptors in the second round, which looked possible here on Sunday, at least the Raptors part of it. Up 24, and when Wagner got hurt, that gave me a bad vibe, just because, you know what, it's hit these 55-1, you need everything to go right. You can't afford to just start lopping off players and losing talent, and he's one of their better players, and he certainly matters. But up 24 Friday night, didn't feel like it would matter. Up 24 in the second half, a dominant first half, and then the Pistons made a run to cut it to 10. I was doing the Friday night show with Matt Humans on VSiN. And, all right, 10, you're starting to get nervous. Right then, Orlando hits them with a run to get it back up to 17. The building's going crazy, and they're taking, like, deep breath of relief, deep sigh of relief. You're going to the second round in a game where scoring's hard to come by. It's more of a defensive struggle, and these games were all ugly, all low scoring in that series. All right, you're in good shape here. Orlando will move on to do what they did in the second half. 4-for-37 from the floor. Missed 24 straight shots. I mean, you've seen all the stats by now. 45 minutes in real time without scoring. And then you knew, and I knew when I was talking about Sunday doing the show with John Jastrzemski. You knew Orlando wasn't going to get off the bus. It was basically them flying to their own funeral. And they actually hung around for a half. I think they led 45-40. And as soon as they were up by five, Detroit hit them with like a 7-0 run, went back and forth. Orlando led by a point or two. And then right before the half, Detroit hit them with a run. And you felt the run was going to come at some point. And it did come. It got up to, I think, 11 at half. And once it's 11, forget it. I mean, you could, as Warner Wolf used to say, turn the TV sets off now. That game was over at halftime. And it was just a bludgeoning in the second half, which is what I expected. After Friday night, I had no faith in Orlando. It wasn't a reverse jinx or anything. I just had no faith that Orlando, I thought, had to win the series in six, especially without Wagner. I just didn't think they would win another game in that building. The offense looked broken on Friday night, and that's just another situation where you get your heart broken by these long shots. And I know they still had some work to do, and who knows if they would have won in the second round. Probably against Cleveland, they wouldn't, but you probably could have monetized that ticket depending on the price, but you could have at least sweated out or tried to win one more round, and then you would have been in good shape in a conference finals, I think, against the Knicks coming up, but wasn't meant to be. Wagner gets hurt. A 3-1 lead goes down by the wayside here, and the Magic get eliminated. That was a tough one, but other than that, not a lot of drama here on Sunday. Cavs putting their finishing touches on the Raptors. That game wasn't really competitive in the second half. Cavs hit them with a run. Same thing. When these favorite teams, especially at home in a Game 7, and the Game 7 home teams haven't been as dominant the last 4 or 5 years. I know for a while it was like 75-80% these home teams win Game 7. Going into Sunday, the last 17, it had been 10-7 to the road team, dating back to, I think, 2021. And, of course, 2020 with the bubble, you kind of throw that out. But when you got the better team at home in a Game 7, like the Cavs over the Raptors, like the Magic were inferior to the Pistons, Once you get that thing to double digits, the building's going crazy. It's very hard to erase those deficits. And we saw that on Sunday with, again, the games being pretty anticlimactic. The game on Saturday was good. The Celtics Sixers, it had a lot of subplots. It had it had a lot of different historical aspects. The Sixers had lost six straight series to the Celtics. Only four teams now in history have come back from 3-1 with game seven on the road. One of them, I believe, was the Celtics against the Sixers in 68, Rockets against the Suns in 95, the famous one with the Cavs doing it against the Warriors in 2016, and now the Sixers, who, my goodness, didn't even spend that much time on that series against the Celtics, because doing the show a week ago, they were burying the Celtics, up 3-1. Game five is at home. I know they haven't been great at home, but they were like 12, 13-point favorites in game five. I mean, who thinks at that point they're going to lose as 13-point favorites in game five, lose as 7.5-point favorites in game six, and then big favorites again in game seven, they're going to lose all three. But it happened. And looking at the personnel, looking at the rosters, especially without Tatum, not much of a fluke. When you have Embiid, and that's the thing with the Sixers, we've always talked about like if and when and all these little caveats, but when they're healthy, that's the thing with the Celtics. When they're healthy, you always hear that about them. They're dangerous when Embiid's healthy. It's just Embiid's never healthy. And even going into this Knicks series, his knee's banged up. I guess his hip is bothering him. Maxi collided into him. And every time he hits the ground, you have to hold your breath. But George got a little time off before the series. Embiid recovered in time. Maxi's tremendous. That Sixer team was better on Saturday night. The players on the floor wearing the Philly uniforms were better than the players on the floor wearing the Boston uniforms. I don't know where this goes big picture for Boston, because this is now three times in 4 years you've had horrendous series losses. 3 years ago against Miami, 2 years ago against the Mavs, they won the title. And then last year against the Knicks, another big series loss. So huge favorite. They lose as a series favorite. Another huge series favorite against the Knicks. And then this year, the collapse against the Sixers. But sandwiched in between that is a championship against Dallas. And you could say, you know what, you poke holes in it and say, if they didn't draw Dallas, if they drew Denver, if they drew somebody better, that was kind of a fluky year where they got the 5 seed from the West and they got everyone in the East that got hurt and kind of fell apart around them, that they wouldn't have won that year, maybe. But hey, these titles are hard to win. But it is a very interesting conversation about Boston and Missoula and Tatum and Brown and just all of the threes they shoot. So we'll see what the offseason holds for them. There's going to be a lot of interesting offseason questions for a lot of these teams, whether it's Boston, the Joker. There's going to be a lot to unpack with a lot of this stuff. So it should be a fun offseason, but should be a good round two in the East. Cleveland and Detroit, basically a pick 'em here as this line pops up. And then the Knicks and Philly's going to have some juice. You got the local rivalry. They played in the playoffs 2 years ago. There was some animosity there. There was a bunch of great games. Knicks a pretty big 250 or so, minus 250 favorite. Haven't dug into it too much. Without looking too much into it, I would say Knicks in six. I haven't really finalized my pick, but that would be the one. It feels like four would, four being a sweep would seem disrespectful. Even five would seem disrespectful. There's a lot of talent on the floor for Philly for that to go four or five. Maybe it goes seven, but somewhere, Knicks winning a longer series, six, maybe seven. I do think Philly has enough talent to win games in the series, but Knicks are deeper. The Knicks, I think, more rest. You always have to worry about Embiid or George or one of those guys re-injuring something. So I think the Knicks win, but I do think it's a longer series. The series in the West, I'm not sure what you're getting out of the Minnesotas and the Lakers of the world. I know nobody picked the Lakers in the last round. I'll put my hand up there. I was shocked, and I was surprised they won Friday night. They buried Houston, and Houston's another team. They got plenty of offseason issues to figure out. But game one on Monday night, and why these games cross over. Like, so on Monday night, 8 o'clock Eastern, 8:10 Eastern, Knicks minus 7.5 against Philly, total 212.5. And then you have 9:40 Eastern, Spurs laying 13.5 to Minnesota, total 217.5. Why? I mean, you only have two games a night. You got enough time here. You could spread these out. Why they overlap like this, I'm not sure, but they do. And then Tuesday night, OKC laying 15.5 to the Lakers. 15.5. I saw some historical notes. The biggest underdog the Lakers ever been in the series. Biggest game one or biggest individual game they've ever been an underdog in. Biggest spread. This is you don't see a lot of 15.5, especially in the second round. 15.5 is a ton of points for the second round. I'm not telling you, I'm looking to take the points because it doesn't look like Luka's coming back anytime soon. Thunder are home. They're rested. They're motivated. And they buried the Lakers, end of the regular season about a month or so ago. They absolutely bludgeoned the Lakers. So that line is justified. The Spurs would be one that I think that's a touch high at 13.5. But, and Edwards is now questionable. I think that's probably more gamesmanship than anything. But both of these teams, obviously enormous, enormous favorites here on the series price in the Western Conference. So East semifinals here, East second round should be good. I always say the second round is the best round just in terms of the blend of, you still have a decent volume of games, unlike the conference finals where it's like one game a night and they never have two games a night. After this round, it's no more two games a night. It's only one game a night, I believe. Second round is the best balance of volume of games and quality of games where, you know, usually all the series are good, all the series are competitive. Not really the case this year, but this might give us a time to take a little break here and there from the NBA, talk a little baseball here, because not sure how much time needs to be spent on OKC and the Lakers and Spurs and Timberwolves. Spurs minus 1,200 for the series, OKC minus 1,600 for the series. Hard to see either the Wolves or the Lakers getting more than a game. To me, the Thunder to sweep plus 125 is a good bet. I just don't see how the Lakers get multiple games here. With their, you just look at the rosters, their roster versus the OKC roster. I just don't see how you get more than a game. Outside of LeBron, can LeBron get him a game at somehow? I guess, but getting him two seems like a stretch. I do think Minnesota could be a little bit more competitive, but asking a lot for them to actually, you know, win the series and push it to six, seven, anything like that. I guess the longer it goes, the better a chance that Edwards comes back, and then who knows? But I think we're looking at one of them's a sweep, one of them's in five, that kind of scenario in the West. So East should be good. West, not so much. The Magic, just frustrating, man. You keep betting these long shots, and maybe Ben Rice will come through for us at the end of the year. He had another home run on Sunday, and that's down to 15-1. I saw he left the game. He fielded a pickoff throw, Yankee first baseman, and then got hurt fielding the pickoff throw, bruised hand, x-rays negative, so couldn't imagine he's out too long. Famous last words, but maybe that one will get home. But man, these long shots that flirt with you and tease you and get close but don't quite get home can certainly be frustrating. But NBA playoffs, we'll get JBT's thoughts. He's the best with this, so excited to see what he thinks about all of these series, the props, game ones. That is next. This should have been more podcast. All right, we are back. Should have been more podcast. Pod to the future, money moves. He joins us frequently. He joins us now. It is the great Jonathan Vontobel, JBT. On to round two, man. What's going on? Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I debut the new minor league cap. I collect a few of these bad boys. These are the Vegas Villains. I think it's one of my better ones that I've collected in recent days.
Who are the Vegas Villains? I do like it.
So it's the Aviators. It's the A is AAA team, but it's one of their alternate logos. So they have like three that they have. One of the hats that I'm trying to get my hands on, but they don't sell. I don't know if I've told you this. My head size is huge. I wear a size 8 fitted. So it's hard to get my hands on some hats. And they have, Los Reyes de Plata, which is like the Silver Kings, I guess, or something like that, the Silver Royals. I'm really trying to get my hands on one of those because that logo is really clean. One of my kids has it, but it's like, you know, a 6 1/4, and that is not going to fit. I don't even think my knuckle, let alone my head.
Yes, we got the Hartford Yard Goats, the Rockies AA affiliate, yeah, kind of right down the road from us. And they just, the uniforms are great. The teams they play and just the logos, there's something great about minor league baseball and just the charm of it. But all right, let's get into some hoops before we get into round two. Sunday, kind of an anticlimactic game. I never thought Orlando was getting off the bus after what happened Friday night. I'm still annoyed by that, to be up 24 and to blow that. Yeah. And then I felt like the Cavs were probably too much for the Raptors, which ended up being the case. Let's go back to Saturday night because that was just so much fun. And I had you on a couple days before the playoffs. You and I both kind of agreed, hey, why did the Celtics get so much respect, so much trust? Not that I did anything to act on it in terms of a bet, but the Celtics go down, they make history, losing a 3-1 lead with game 7 at home. What was your reaction? Do you think anything going forward gets broken up about the Celtics? And how about these Sixers, who we've all always been saying, if they're healthy, when they're healthy? Well, they were finally healthy and they had a big time moment Saturday night.
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of things. I wanted to start with Philly first because, you know, we always focus on the losers, but the winners deserve a ton of credit because they're still playing. And, you know, I was on with you. I've said it on Hardwood Handicappers. And I do have a preseason Eastern Conference ticket on Philly. So, you know, I'm very happy that they're still alive here because I thought that, you know, the upside of this team when they're healthy could be one of the better teams in the East. And I don't... You know, a lot of people, when it comes to the discourse around the Celtics, are just going to use the number next to the Philadelphia 76ers as we move forward, right? They're a 7 seed. We know that they're more than that. Injuries, suspensions really derailed what was a regular season that was disappointing by many as we entered into it. But they are the fly in the ointment. They are the team that I don't think I would be shocked. I mean, if you're talking about hitting on the upside of your talent with Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, I texted Zach Cohen and Kelly Bidlin yesterday. I was like, dude, the suspension was great for Paul George. He got 25 games off. He's their third option, and he's fresh as hell. And, like, he looked great in that series against Boston. They're a real danger in the Eastern Conference. So Philly, I think, should be regarded as such. We could get to that when we talk about that series against New York. What I find fascinating about Boston, and it is something you and I hit on, I think, that episode that you're talking about, Joe Mazzulla destroyed preseason expectations with this team. Like, absolutely destroyed them. We thought it was a gap year. We thought they were going to be competing for a lottery pick. Their center rotation was abysmal. And so they exceed those expectations, and then we get into this series, and you and I said it. It's on the record. You know, they're like minus 900 to win this series. Like, that's a lot for a team that is not, you know, roster-wise anywhere near what they were a season ago. You know, it's weird that there's this market trust all of a sudden in Boston just because Tatum's back, even though this is a stripped-down roster. And I don't know about you, Will, but that looked like that stripped-down roster in those last three games. They didn't have anybody at center that could deal with Joel Embiid. That was a problem. And we could talk about the three-point shooting, which I have lots of good points on, but I find it amazing how there's a lot of people who will simultaneously admit that Boston exceeded preseason expectations by a wide margin, but then also hold them to the standard post-exceeding of those expectations and say they shouldn't have lost this series. I think it's a little ridiculous. And when you view everything as a whole, it makes some sense that in a vacuum, they just lost the series to an extent because Philly's a much better team than what they were. And Boston is not as good a team as we expected them to be once the postseason got set, if that ramble makes sense.
It makes sense. I will say this. I said in my open, it was a shocking result. When you look at a week ago, it was 3-1 Boston.
Yep.
As they get both in Philly, they destroy them in game four. With a double-digit lead, great point. And 5 at home, 7 at home. That being said, the players on the floor Saturday night wearing Sixer uniforms were better than the players on the floor wearing uniforms for the Celtics.
Dude, I saw somebody, I think it was Julian Edlow. I love Julian Edlow. I'm sure you've had him on, but he's a big Boston fan, but he's like, you know, what's it called? Like, you know, Hugo Gonzalez is, or Luka Garza is not doing it at center. And I want to be like, well, then who are you going to use, dude? Like,
right.
It's Nemias Keita and it's Nikola Vucevic. Who else are you going to throw at Joel Embiid that is really going to help you realistically stop this? And Embiid finally figured it out at the end of that series. He was bodying those dudes up. Vucevic had nothing. He was moving him off. Like, whenever he would post up Vucevic, every time he would bang him, Vucevic would move like 2 feet backwards. He had absolutely nothing. And that, in terms of like physical stature, was their best option for him outside of Keita. And none of them were going to stop him when he actually figured out that he's pretty good down low. So I thought this was a roster when you looked at him that was severely limited. And to tie in ever so briefly the three-point shooting, the career 36% three-point shooter Derek White completely disappearing for the season and in the series for the most part is something that killed him too. I mean, outside of game 7 in the first half, he couldn't be trusted. They were playing off of him. They did not care about him as a three-point shooter, and that really killed him as well. And that's not something I think you expect as you head into that series. Does Mazzulla deserve criticism for the starting lineup in game 7? Absolutely. I don't know what the hell that was. But this is one of my favorite stats. You know, going into today, Boston, by the NBA tracking data, had the most uncontested three-point attempts in the postseason so far. 25 and a half per game. So, like, when people are criticizing them for the way they run their offense, what are you supposed to do when you are the best team in the postseason at generating uncontested three-point looks, but they're just not falling the way that they should be?
I'm with you. Let's move on here. We got this series 2 years ago in the first round. It was a fun series, a lot of crazy games. Knicks ultimately won in 6. That's kind of where I'm leaning here. Knicks minus 270 seems a touch high. -7.5 for game 1 seems a touch high. You always have to worry. Embiid, who got banged up at the end of that game, can he just do it for another 7 games? Can he not run out of gas?
I'm kind of looking at Nixon 6 at plus 500. To me, that's kind of the best bang for your buck here instead of laying the 270. I think the Knicks win. I think it's a longer series. I do think Philly wins games in this series.
Yeah.
Can Philly pull the upset? Where are you at here with this, what should be a fun second-round series here?
Yeah, I think first off, Philly can absolutely pull the upset. I mean, they're a very good team, and they have. I mean, this isn't a controversy, right? It's not controversial. They have the best player in Joel Embiid. I mean, he's healthy. He's playing extremely well. So, like, they have the best individual player on the floor. I think pricing wise for the series, I think you're right. I mean, I thought it's a touch too high. To your point, like, I was expecting like maybe Knicks like -225 or something like that. So, you know, I think you can tempt me just by the number of Philly +220 to win it. I think really the one that I really like here, it's only $130 on over 5.5 games for the series. I think that's a really fair price to lay. I think it's going to be competitive. I think this could be 7 games. I think Philly could win this thing, absolutely. And I still, you know, the Knicks, absolutely beat down the Hawks when they won those games. Like, they were head and shoulders the better team than Atlanta. There was also a series that should not have gone as long as it did, because they should have won that thing with ease. So I think there's some of that nature to it, but I do think that Embiid, it's a stiffer test with Karl Anthony Towns, right? Like, that's going to be a little bit harder to match up with down low, and they've got the two big bodies that they can throw at Embiid if they want to go double big with Robinson and Towns, and I wonder how he handles that. But I do think that there's not a true on-guard or on-ball matchup defensively for Tyrese Maxey. I think there's going to be a lot of the same Jalen Brunson lowlights that we saw in the Hawks series where McCollum was cooking him. I think Maxey can do that to him too. And I think there's going to be some things where the 76ers can have a lot of success. So I think it's going to be a long series, 6 or 7 games, but my best bet over 5.5 -130.
I like that. I'm with you. I'd be surprised. 4 seems just unrealistic, barring an injury, and even 5 yeah. seems a bit disrespectful. To me, this is 6 or 7. Should be a long series. How about the other one? We just went final here. And by the way, NBA game 7 unders, I know it's a small sample size. It might be dead. It's just, man, these get taxed so much to the under. Dude, I saw game 1 of Orlando-Detroit was like 221 was the total. And then game 7 in some spots closed 199.5, 200. And I think it landed right on 200. When you're talking about like a 20-point adjustment from game 1, an 8-10-point adjustment from game 6, is it just is that too much of a tax here to play these unders?
I think so. I mean, it's funny. I always try to catch the falling knife. So at times I've been burned by this because, you know, you look at some of these, you're like, come on, dude, like, we're at 197.5. That comes back to there was an Orlando Cavs series a couple years ago where game 7 on, I think it was like an Easter Sunday or something like that. I don't know what it was. But either way, they had played Easter Sunday. I don't think that matches up.
But Cinco de Mayo, like, I think I remember.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah,
it was like a holiday. There we go. Yeah, thank you. It was one of those holidays. One of those meaningless holidays. No, I'm just kidding. But the total is like 197.5. You're like, dude, this is ridiculous, but I'm with you. I mean, especially when you look at some of these games, you know, I'd mentioned like the Boston Philly game, for example, at least you have like offensive upside and individual players, things like that. Like, it just gets so baked in, and then you see all these trends that people point out, and then you get other people to pile on. Like, before close, I think it benefits you if there's not any buyback to snap a little bit on the over every time.
Yeah. What Detroit and Cleveland, I know you're a Cleveland guy. Series is basically a toss up here at FanDuel. Yeah. This line's just popping up as we finally have some correct series score, all of these things. Who do you think wins this series? Pistons -120, Cavs even money. So my guess is you're thinking Cavs in a longer series. Is that fair or not necessarily?
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, I think what the Cavs are not going to be able to do to an extent that the Orlando Magic are going to be able to do or were able to do is, you know, the Magic weren't scared defensively against Detroit. Like, they had the big bodies that they could switch multiple dudes onto Cade Cunningham and feel comfortable. They could bottle him up. They could say, none of your perimeter guys are going to beat us. And now I think the thing that Detroit is still going to struggle with is Jalen Duren against that front court is going to have some problems. Like, both Mobley and Allen, I think, can match up defensively well with Duren. So I think, again, you're going to be searching for a secondary offense creator if you're Detroit here. So that's going to be a small problem for them. But I don't see that there's many pieces on this roster for Cleveland that are going to be able to stop a Cade Cunningham really in any way. And Cade was great, dude. Like, you know, he's underrated. Look at his stats for the last 3 games of this series against Orlando. Yeah, he kicked their ass, man. Like, that was awesome. So I think he's going to have a good series, and I think that Cleveland's going to win this. You know me, like, if I pick something, I'm relatively stubborn. I'll stick with it. Although my Denver-Cleveland finals is not really looking particularly great. Is Denver still in this thing? But oof. I do think that the Cavaliers can win this, because I'd also say this, and I don't know what the final number is today with their shooting. I'll look it up really quick. This was a weird series for Cleveland in terms of their three-point shooting. When they went to Toronto, it completely disappeared. They shot like 30% from three whenever they went north of the border. But at home, they were much better. Today, still, they didn't even shoot the ball well. They were 11 of 39. They should be a better shooting team. So maybe that opens up a little bit here against Detroit, and they find their rhythm. Again, if you want to tell me you still don't trust James Harden, I get it. He wasn't even that great today. 18 points, 3 of 9. Got to the free throw line 13 times, though. I still think that they have enough to beat Detroit in a long series.
Can you make a case for either the Wolves or the Lakers winning more than a game?
Yeah, for sure. Dude, Timberwolves, so this is the one I like. You can get Timberwolves plus 2.5 games at plus 220, I believe.
That's crazy to me, too. I agree with that.
Yeah. Plus 2.5 games at plus 220 is, dude, I was watching B-Rush, right before we were on, while I was watching the game, I was getting ready for, money moves, putting some stuff in the rundown. I submitted, for video, there's B-Roll. Anthony Edwards was putting up shots of practice the other day. He's John Krasinski, I think is how you pronounce his last name. He covers the Wolves. He had a great tweet along the lines of, Edwards is listed as questionable, not doubtful, because he is pushing to play for game one, and shoot around tomorrow will be a big test for him. So there's a shot he's even out there for game two. And if that's the case, if I'm getting Ant in this team plus 2.5 games at plus 220 to plus 225, I think that's definitely worth looking at. San Antonio is very good, but this is still a team that is very good defensively in Minnesota, at least has a big that you feel like you can trust against Victor Wembanyama. There's so many different aspects that I think they match up well here with San Antonio that if you give me Ant in like game two, I think, and even in game three, which is seems to be like what they're targeting for sure, I think that plus 2.5 game seems pretty wild to me. So at that price, I'm in.
What's the prognosis on Dosunmu?
I haven't seen yet. What is it?
I haven't either. That's why I'm curious, because he obviously matters. Shannon played well for them, yeah, obviously, but I'm with you. I thought, you know what?
He got probably upgraded Spurs to questionable five 3 hours ago.
That's that to me, that's the difference. Like if there's no Ant, this is five or less. If there's Ant, there's a different conference. It does seem like a little extreme. I mean, what's it? A bone bruise and a knee contusion,
yeah,
or a hyperextended knee. Man, you're just gonna come back just like nothing a week later. I guess it's possible. I mean, he's young. He's a 1% of 1% athlete. So these guys recover quicker too. So I guess it's possible.
Yes. And by the way, the quote from Finch about Dosunmu, practice today, so this is what we recorded this on Sunday. He was, quote, pretty much involved in all parts of practice, qualified that today's practice was, quote, medium intensity. So sounds like Dosunmu, upgraded to questionable a couple of hours ago, is on track to potentially play.
Would you take a shot at the 7-1 on the T-Wolves to actually win the series?
I would too. I mean, I think the thing that I would worry is Anthony Edwards doesn't play game one and they fall on a 1-0 hole. Then you could probably get something just a little bit more on that series price, right?
Right.
So that's what I would wait for, is after game one. Because if they lose game one, which seems to be expected, obviously, by the market standards, then you can get that. And we're still kind of on the timeline that I want, which is, hey, Ant comes back in game two or game three, and you still have a shot to win the series.
Lakers are going to get swept by the Thunder?
I think so. I think this is going to get pretty ugly. I think Oklahoma City, look, they're very good defensively. And I don't know about you, but I thought that Lakers series win, while there's a lot of good positives for them, especially like J.J. Redick, I thought it was awesome in that series in terms of the way that he was coaching it up. I thought that was a lot about the matchup and a lot about Houston than it was more about the Lakers kind of discovering something. They're, I think, going to be really up against it. This is an awesome perimeter defense, obviously, that can throw just body after body at Austin Reeves, who's back. It doesn't sound like Luka's prognosis is very positive either. So it sounds like he's not even close to coming back in this series. If you were to tell me that he would be back to rescue them a la Ant, like game two, game three, then I'd give him a little bit more of a shot. But he hasn't even, by all accounts, even started like running or moving. I mean, I don't know how you're going to expect that he's going to be back here. And I think this is a little different. Like, we made the case for the Houston series, where if you're LeBron, just, hey, man, just put on the cape and get one. And then maybe you just wait for reinforcements to arrive. And obviously he did more than that. I think that this is going to be a pretty big wake-up call for them in terms of them running into OKC.
Yep, I would agree with that. How about the game ones? Knicks laying 7.5, Spurs laying 13.5, and then Tuesday, Pistons laying 3.5, and OKC laying 15.5. Any of those you like? What's your favorite among the bunch there?
The favorite among the bunch would be Philly. I do think that they're able to stay inside of 7.5. I was texting about this with Kelly earlier today, and home court is worth a little bit more in these NBA postseasons than it is in the regular season. We've got years of data to kind of back that up now at this point. Even if you want to make home court like 3.5, are we really saying that the Knicks are about 4 points better on a neutral than Philly, given the way that they're playing and that Embiid's healthy? I would say no. I think that gap is a little bit smaller. I thought this number was going to be closer to like 5.5. So I think Philly plus 7.5 out of all of those, to me, is the one on the top.
Yeah, plus you're fading the Knicks off that 50-point win. It's almost like a football game where, you know, that team that scores 40 or 50, everyone wants to bet, and that's usually a good time to bet against them.
Sure.
Betting against the Knicks after that, I still can't believe some of the scores in that game. Seeing a score of 72-22 live in an NBA playoff game, just wild. What kind of
the when we I'd say real go quick, ahead. I was just going to say the rebuttal would be, too, is that people like to play against these teams coming off of game sevens. But I think that Philly's a good enough team that the number, I'd take the risk.
When we get to the offseason, Giannis goes where? Does Jokic go anywhere? I know there's some reports today. Shams said, hey, he's going to resign. Doesn't mean he doesn't get traded. Are we looking at some wild offseason, or is it just, you know, these teams get eliminated, we overreact, say they got to make a bunch of moves, when more often than not, they just kind of run it back?
I mean, I think Giannis is gone. He has to be. Like, I'm tired of this, and I'm not even a Bucks fan. But it's just, you know, it's the cancerous couple who just won't divorce. Like, I mean, they're arguing in public, like, and they're not even going back and having makeup sex either. You know what I mean? Like, they're just absolute nightmares. So I think that more than likely, I think the favorite right now is that Giannis and Dame reunite in the Pacific Northwest. I think that's an attractive package for Milwaukee. They can get some of their picks back. That's something that I think they would like to have control of. I think Portland fancied itself a team that obviously made a little bit of a run, at least making it to the postseason, and now can convince itself that with Dame coming off of this injury, whatever you get for Jrue Holiday, all those sort of things, that you can build a roster that all of a sudden is a little bit more competitive in the Western Conference, which is going to look very different, by the way. I mean, we know that Utah is going to be pretty good here. Like, there's so many different teams. They're going to have some different looks to them next year. And I think Portland probably views there's probably some upward mobility in the Western Conference to an extent, and this is maybe the time to strike. So I would say that the favorite is that he is a Portland Trailblazer by next year.
Jokic, any possibility? Because that team just does not seem like there's a path for another title. There's not that many resources. The owner seems kind of cheap. They've kind of fired their shots with draft picks. I don't know. Is there a path for Jokic in Denver to be a title contender, or is it just, you know what, he's happy there and they just kind of ride it out?
No, I mean, I think both can be kind of true. I think he obviously wants to stay there. I mean, there's something about, like, you know, I don't know if it's like Serbian loyalty or whatever it is, but he seems like a pretty low key guy, right? Like, he's just like, man, I just want to play basketball and then, like, race my horses. I don't want to move anywhere, do anything. So I think he stays around. Obviously, you mentioned it, the news that he's going to extend. I also think that it's a little forgotten, obviously, that Peyton Watson and Aaron Gordon were hurt in that series, and that, you know, that those two guys are pretty important pieces to what they want to do. I do think they probably see some movement. I think Cam Johnson was kind of a disappointment for them, so we'll see what they want to do coming off of that and moving him. And also, I mean, I made the joke to Zach, we were on Harvard Handicappers the other day, is there anybody in this postseason that lost more aura, as the kids would say, than David Adelman? I mean, the guy really has to do some self-reflection. I mean, he was thin-skinned, he was testy, but I think we also shouldn't forget that with a lesser team, to an extent, that team did push OKC to 7 last year and was pretty close to potentially being, you know, the Western Conference representative should they get out of that series. I like them a lot, so I still think they're going to be pretty good. There's going to be some changes, especially with the depth. And the one thing I'll say, too, they probably do regret giving Christian Brown that much money. I mean, like, he really isn't that big of a difference maker, and you do wonder what that means for them if they're going to try to move off of him. So I think there's probably some changes on the periphery of the roster, but I think it generally comes back the same.
Just seems like they won the title in 23, and every year they get a little farther away. I know last year, hey, Game 7 against OKC, there's nothing. Yeah, that too. And there's no shame in losing OKC. They just keep taking little steps back and back and back. And look, it's just a question everybody has to deal with in the West or in the league. The Spurs and the Thunder, with their talent, with their youth, boy, that bar is pretty high. It's not like, you know, the Nuggets, this version of the Nuggets, could have won it again if it was 2023. There wasn't a Spurs or an OKC. This is a different level, different caliber of team you're going to have to compete against and ultimately beat these years with the Spurs, the Thunder, and how good they are.
No, I would agree. I mean, like I mentioned too, the Jazz are going to be a lot better next year. Like, they're going to be really freaking good next year with the trades acquisitions that they made. So that's going to be something they have to deal with. And I'll be like, to tie it into the Adelman thing too, I was surprised by, again, to use a young person's term, the lack of dog from this team. I mean, they looked like big old quitters. I mean, like, Jokic was getting all pissy throughout the series, not really liking everything, unless they were up by 10 at the end of the game, and then he was all joking around and everything. Adelman, with the stuff that he was doing in the media, the press conferences and whatnot with the media. So I was very surprised by the what seemed to be the lack of mental fortitude for a team that had already done it and had did what they did last year, which was beat the Clippers in seven and then push OKC to seven and looked like they were full of like grit and grind. And, you know, maybe Malone was like a big part of that. And losing that is the non-quantifiable, non-data thing, which is when you have a guy that's able to chew your ass out and get the most out of you, sometimes you need that dude. And it didn't seem like Adelman really had that team going in that direction.
All right, last one. Revised final pick would be what?
For the NBA Finals, we'll go with OKC and Cleveland. We'll stick with my boys since they're still alive.
Okay. JVT, you're the best, man. Hardwood handicappers, money moves, where else? What did I miss?
Pod to the future.
All right.
That's it. Unless you're a Vegas local, ESPN Vegas.
All right, man. Appreciate it. Hopefully we'll do it again soon.
You got it, bud. Thank you.
All right. Thanks to JVT. Rate, review, subscribe. We will be back on Wednesday. See you then.